The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. During the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer, Virtuoso Traveler Magazine, and AAA Go Magazine. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. They are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. You may recall that we used a travel by and travel to water theme in our previous episode of Armchair Traveler. Well, we're going to continue that theme in part today for a couple of articles. And we'll start with the Associated Press writer Hillary Speed's article, Do Go Chasing Waterfalls, in the July 8th, 2018 issue of the News and Observer. Our dateline is Brevard in western North Carolina. Some are big, some are small, some are wide, some are narrow, some crash down, some are a slow trickle, and some you can slide right down. There are at least 250 waterfalls in Transylvania County, North Carolina, located about halfway between Asheville, North Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina. Known as the Land of Waterfalls, the region was the biggest concentration of waterfalls on the East Coast, according to the local tourism board. The Cascades are particularly dramatic now after record-setting rainfall this spring. Unique features include a temperate rainforest in Gorges State Park, where more than 80 inches or 200 centimeters of rain fall annually. This is a land of all kinds of superlatives, says Nathan Jordan, a spokesman for the Transylvania County Tourism and Development Authority. With lots of state and national parks in the area, visitors have easy access to other outdoor adventures too, including biking and fly fishing. Travelers who do go chasing waterfalls this summer could challenge themselves to hunt down as many as they can, bucket list style, or they could make a leisurely jaunt to one or two. There's no wrong reason to visit a waterfall. And I'll inject here before we continue our article, I was able to go and visit some of these last year in a stop as visiting my sister who lives outside of Asheville. So we drove down to Brevard and went over to Pisgah National Forest, which you'll hear more about in just a minute. And the waterfalls are not only spectacular, it's very busy. There's a lot of people who just park along the side and just take time to go visit. And it is a very restful visit, I must say. It's quite unique. Now we continue. The next subhead says, Instagram shot. Those who want the best no-filter photos for the least amount of hiking can easily pop into the Pisgah National Forest and take selfies in front of the 60-foot, 18-meter looking glass falls. You can't miss that one. That's where most of the crowds are. 5 miles past the forest main entrance, this beast of a waterfall can be viewed within steps of the main road, US 276. A staircase meets the road near the top of the gushing falls. You can park your car and take in the breathtaking view from up there, or walk down to get a closer view, or even swim. Movie buffs can pose as Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games at the Triple Falls and Bridal Veil Falls in the DuPont State Forest, near where some scenes from the movie were filmed. At Hooker Falls in the same forest, see the wide 13-foot or 4-meter falls where Hawkeye's canoe plunged into the last of the Mohicans as he fled Magua's men. Go get wet. Swimming is permitted at many of the waterfalls in Transylvania County. At Hooker Falls, water from the Little River pours over the ledge to create a large and popular swimming hole with various depths. Those who want calm can wade into the shallow creek area farther away from the falls, while the more adventurous can swim into the deeper parts or even dare to walk along the rocks underneath the falls. For an even more exhilarating experience, some of the waterfalls are smooth enough to slide down. At Sliding Rock, less than 3 miles or 5 kilometers down the road from the Looking Glass Falls in the Pisgah National Forest, lifeguards monitor visitors who climb to the top of a giant rock formation and then slide down the natural water slide into a 7-foot, 2-meter pool of water at the bottom. Children can ride on their parents' laps, and life jackets are available for a small fee. Another popular sliding spot is Turtleback Falls in Gorges State Park. It's a steep drop-off and not monitored by lifeguards, and it's only reached by a strenuous 1.75-mile or 2.8-kilometer hike. you need to be a strong swimmer, and it's not the most family-friendly thing in the world, but it's awesome, Jordan said. For somebody that's a millennial and a traveler and a bucket lister, they're going to get the biggest thrill out of their destination, out of that destination, he notes. Well, Pura Vida Adventures offers canyoneering trips that include rappelling down waterfalls, some as high as 75 feet, 23 meters. The company also offers family tours themed on the Hunger Games, referring to younger participants as tributes, and teaching survival skills involving fire, shelter, snares, knot tying, and off-trail travel. And our final subhead says, go to relax. While waterfalls offer a dose of the unexpected for visitors chasing thrills, they can also be peaceful and meditative. A novice waterfall hunter or a serenity seeker might try Morco Falls. The water spills over a stone shelf in a narrow curtain just a few feet across, but its 50-foot or 15-meter freefall cascade is stunning. It's accessible via a mile, 1.4-mile, 2.25-kilometer hike. The water gathers in shallow puddles at the bottom, making it good for small children and those who don't want to get soaked. But even here, intrepid visitors can walk behind the falls and take a shower underneath if they'd like. That sounds quite spectacular there, doesn't it? Well, our next writer, Martha Quillen of the News and Observer, is going to take us to some North Carolina beaches where sea turtle fans can watch researchers dig up hatched nests. Now, her article appeared in the July 15th, 2018 issue of the NNO. The public is again invited to watch biologists dig up hatched sea turtle nests along North Carolina beaches during August and September. Loggerheads, green turtles, Kemp's Ridleys, and the occasional leatherneck come out of the come out of the ocean onto the shore each spring and summer, where they dig in and lay from 120 to 150 eggs. During the night, a couple of months later, each nest boils and the hatchlings make their way toward the surf. After a nest hatches, biologists excavate the site to see what remains. They count the empty eggshells and collect unhatched eggs for research. Sometimes they find live or dead hatchlings. At excavations where the public is invited to attend, while biologists examine the nest, a park ranger or trained volunteer presents a program on sea turtles and shares what researchers have found. Biologists say nest excavations are an important way to get data on annual sea turtle hatch and emergence success rates. So far this year, turtles have built 531 nests along the state's 330 miles of ocean-facing beaches, according to a database maintained by the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission's Sea Turtle Project. The nests are monitored and protected by several agencies, including Wildlife Resources, the National Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Marine Corps, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the State Division of Parks and Recreation, and UNC Wilmington. An army of volunteers organized by local groups helps watch over the nest. According to the database, this season's first hatch was a loggerhead nest at Oak Island, whose hatchlings emerged Sunday night, July 8th. Loggerheads are by far the most common sea turtles to nest in North Carolina. They account for 513 of the nests found so far this year. There's one green turtle nest, two leatherbacks, 10 Kemp's Ridleys, and three unknown, the database shows. Because hatchlings aren't entirely predictable, neither are excavations, which happen 2 or 3 days after a nest hatches. Excavations are expected to begin in early August. The Cape Hatteras National Seashore announces excavations one night in advance through its hotline. If you'd like to jot this number down, here's that hotline. Again, if you'd like to see the Cape Hatteras National Seashore excavations or be there for it, 252-475-9629. Again, that hotline is 252-475-9629. The seashore reaches 70 miles from Bodie Island to Ocracoke Island. The Bald Head Island Conservancy holds excavations 3 days after a nest hatches, and they have a website that you can learn more. Again, for the Bald Head Island Conservancy, that website is bhic.org/excavations. One more time, bhic.org/excavations, so you can learn more about the turtle excavations and things going on there. Well, now we're going to take a little bit of a turn here and talk a little bit about early traveling. Among the earliest travelers we know were nomads. And, of course, a nomad is a person or persons who move from one place to another. Writer Mike Plunkett of the Washington Post has found a new type of nomad is evolving in our digital age. As his headline states, for digital nomads, work is wherever the laptop is. This is from the July 8th, 2018 issue of the News and Observer, and you'll find it quite interesting, I think. Our dateline is Medellin, Colombia. Gwendolyn Da Silva rises at 5 a.m. to teach English to Chinese children from a small office just off her kitchen in Colombia. Through an online teaching portal, she gives one-hour private lessons for about 4 hours to children ages 5 to 6. And then she walks to a coffee shop to spend most of the day blogging about Medellin and travel. For nearly 15 years, Da Silva was a corporate marketing executive in London, but she found herself at a crossroads during a rough patch in her life. "I didn't know what to do, so I hired a life coach," Da Silva said. "We went through several months of work and came to the conclusion that the best thing to do would be to take a year off and travel around the world." The 41-year-old native of Glasgow, Missouri, gave up her six-figure salary and spent a year teaching English at South Korea. Or rather, teaching English in South Korea. Now in Medellin, she's part of a community of digital nomads who have moved their lives and work to distant locales, often sun-soaked and always with a solid digital infrastructure to take advantage of a lower cost of living. Many of the nomads call it geo-arbitrage, a term popularized by the Tim Ferriss book, The 4-Hour Work Week, Escape 9-to-5, Live Anywhere, and Join the New Rich. Nomad List, a crowdsourced database, has determined that a single person living in Canggu, Bali, Indonesia, among the top-ranked places for digital nomads on the site. They can rent a private room in a hotel in the center of town and eat three meals a day for about $1,100 a month. Medellin is cheaper, with a monthly cost of around $900. Travelers rely on a budget cottage industry of companies such as Unsettled, Remote Year, Hacker Paradise, and Wanderous Life to help navigate the logistics of working in a foreign country, although not to find the work. Most require that freelance worker clients be in place first. Da Silva came to Medellin with Unsettled, which for a month offered co-working space, cultural tours, and workshops. It also found her an apartment. "I was able to build a community here quite quickly, much quicker here than I ever did in my other places," she said. She finishes teaching at 9 a.m., and then her day is free. She said her plans for the week included touring a sloth sanctuary outside the city and helping craft brewers bottle beer. Teachers who work for VipKid, the online teaching company based in Beijing, are paid $14 to $20 an hour, depending on how they are rated by the students and their parents. Too many low ratings in the company will require that the teachers receive additional training, or it might even fire the teacher. Da Silva said that she likes having the flexibility to choose how much she works and that a lot of credentialing wasn't needed. Colombia, Medellin in particular, is rapidly becoming a hub because of a favorable currency exchange, affordable health care, spring-like weather, and a time zone that makes working with American clients easier than in some other parts of the world. Da Silva does have emergency health insurance. The city is trying to shed its reputation for drug violence. Last year, it was notably not on Business Insider's list of the 50 most violent cities in the world. Take note, New Orleans, Baltimore, and St. Louis were listed. The successful model for a digital nomad includes being able to bill the U.S., so if you need to communicate with people you're billing, there's no question that South America has unique benefits, said Todd Morrill, a Baltimore native and web developer who lives in Colombia. Morrill began a digital nomadic life in 2002, but about a decade later, he settled in Medellin, working legally under a non-resident visa. In 2017, he claimed Colombian residency. In a variation on the footloose lifestyle, some people are turning less nomadic, staying for months and in some cases years, and embedding themselves in communities of like-minded workers. After 6 months in Santiago, Chile, Dustin Laverick, came to Medellin with plans to continue building his online marketing company. Laverick, who is German and in his late 30s, knows the digital nomadic life well, but he doesn't think he fits the usual description. The thing that pops into my head when you say digital nomad is one who is literally going somewhere new for 2 to 3 weeks or a month, always on the move and always traveling, he said. That's the word nomad. I don't think a nomad would sit in one place for 6 months. Yet, that is happening, and some countries are changing visas to accommodate those who linger. Thailand approved the smart visa, what many call the digital nomad visa, which allows knowledge workers and entrepreneurs to live and work there for 4 years without having to apply for a work permit. In late 2017, Colombia streamlined its visa classifications into 3 categories, migrant, visitor, and resident. Depending on the type of work involved, Colombia's migrant visa is good for up to 3 years and a visitor visa up to 6 months in a calendar year. Digital nomads from the United States and Europe can still enter the country and work on a tourist stamp for 90 days, and then they have the option to renew for another 90 days. Even though the digital nomadic lifestyle has grown more appealing, it comes with legal ambiguity and ethical controversy. Many of these workers subscribe to what is known as a flag theory, finding places with favorable tax policies to incorporate their online businesses and living in countries with low or no sales or tourist taxes. However, U.S. citizens are still legally obligated to pay federal taxes even if they claim residency in another country. De Silva finds her tax situation to be continually complicated. It's a gray area, she said, when a U.S. citizen working in another country on a tourist visa is employed by a Chinese company and gets paid in U.S. dollars. Although local residents are generally welcoming, expatriates and digital nomads tend to stick together. I don't think there's an incentive for digital nomads to get involved in local politics and initiatives. Maybe they get on Tinder, but that's about it, says Zima Restrepo, a Colombian who started Catalyst Weekly, an events website geared toward digital nomads and expatriates in Medellin. With most digital nomads working in the knowledge economy, officials in Medellin would like to get them plugged into the local economy, but it can be a tough sell. Wow. Well, you may have heard about raging wildfires and serious flooding causing some problems for travelers in parts of our West Coast, and that may even get some of them to reconsider going there, at least for now. But David Hochman is going to tell us that after months of highway closures, California's Big Sur is back and better than ever. Now, his article, The Open Road, is from the June-July 2018 issue of Virtuoso Traveler. With the possible exception of Route 66, there's not a stretch of road in America as iconic or soul-stirring as Highway 1 along California's mythic Big Sur coast. Here, where the Pacific crashes into limestone coves and ancient redwoods soar through the mist, it's less a drive than a communion with nature, beauty, and wonder itself. Big Sur is an essential part of California coastal trip and an ideal weekend retreat, says Virtuoso Travel Advisor Ken Niebauer of Menlo Park, California. You can drive through the 90-mile area in just a few hours, but be sure to stay a few nights to experience the rugged mountain scenery, pristine beaches, and truly special Virtuoso hotels. After heavy rains last year, a series of landslides shut down sections of the Corkscrew route from San Simeon to Carmel by the Sea, leaving a prime 40-mile segment mostly inaccessible for months. The silver lining is that local resorts and businesses use the time to refresh and build out, and Big Sur today shines just a little brighter. The highway, navigable from the north since last fall, is expected to reopen completely in late summer. What hasn't changed is the area's allure, which has always drawn travelers, artists, architects, and pleasure seekers of every sort. The majority of Big Sur's coastline is protected from development. It's the longest such contiguous preserve in the U.S., which keeps the focus on the sea and mountains, with an occasional cameo by a cougar, California condor, or spouting whale. Adventure can take the form of beach bicycling at low tide or a sunset kayak, but the real thrill is just soaking up that groovy, wave-splashed vibe. With the peaceful Post Ranch Inn as your base, Here's how to make the most of 3 days on the mother of all coast roads. And on day one, and we begin there, Big Sur is as much about the drive as the arrival. It's winding 150 miles from San Francisco and 350 from Los Angeles on a two-lane strip that opened in 1937 after 18 years of construction. Cell service gets spotty just as the road coils and the enchantment really starts to surge. The splendid isolation here outwits even those Silicon Valley gods to the north. On the approach from Monterey, the scenery is so stunning that it's worth paying the toll, $10.25 per vehicle, to tour the famous 17-mile drive, an epic twist through Pebble Beach and Pacific Grove past Spanish Bay, with teetering viewpoints exactly where you want them to be. The lone cypress tree on rocks jutting out over the Pacific is not only the logo of Pebble Beach Golf Links. The company also trademarked the actual tree. How remarkable is it that the day's destination nearly makes you forget the journey? Pulling into Post Ranch Inn, with its cantilevered cliff dwellings appearing to float between water and sky, you understand why the place is a favorite of tech moguls and honeymooning celebs. With very private modern guest rooms and suites on a ridgeline over the sea, the inn is as dramatic a setting for adventure and romance as any in the U.S. It's one of the last adults-only refuges in the true luxury category, Niebauer says. The property, set on 100 mostly untouched acres, emerged from the road closures with refurbished treehouse rooms and new landscaping, plus a beautiful photography gallery selling collector-worthy prints. Sierra Mar, the hotel's restaurant, provides guests with picnic lunches to take to hidden beaches, and there's a fleet of Lexus vehicles available at no charge. For dinner nearby, Nepenthe at 48510 Highway 1 sits 800 feet out over the ocean in a homey cabin-like building that first opened in 1949. Lolly's roast chicken dinner is the signature order, with sage stuffing, cranberries, and just enough crisp skin and juicy meat to distract momentarily from the panoramic terrace vistas. Now on to day two. In such striking surroundings, post-ranch guests typically arrive and are not seen again until checking or looking exceptionally healthy and relaxed, it should be noted. But there's plenty to do outside the suites, strolls through the sculpture gardens, morning yoga classes, and soaks in the heated infinity pools are big here, as are visits to the spa, where scenic treatment rooms include two couple suites and a minimalist glass structure overlooking the verdant Ventana Double Cone Peaks. Leaving the property is okay, too, if you absolutely must. Have your travel advisor arrange a wildlife tour of Andrew Molero State Park. That's near mile marker 51.2 on Highway 1 to spot rare California condors with a conservation expert. Or go out on the Garaputa State Park Beach, Highway 1, 18 miles north of Big Sur, farm fresh picnic box in hand, to watch California gray whales pass close during their annual winter migration. See kayaking and beach biking to view otters and sea lions or other options. Stargazing is never a mistake on clear nights, sheltered from the Bay Area's urban lights. Big Sur's skies are dark enough, particularly around the Pfeiffer Big Sur State Park, and that's near mile marker 47.2 on Highway 1. Here you can track satellites and shooting stars for an evening rich in wishes. Or just hole up at Post Ranch, where they bring out a telescope and complimentary wine for a true cosmic experience. Day 3. Big Sur Bakery at 47540 Highway 1. It's been around since 1936 and is everybody's favorite morning fueling station for fresh pastries and donuts, and later on for grilled sandwiches, meats, and fish. Farther south is Hawthorne Gallery at 48485 Highway 1 in a glass and steel structure under sheltering pines, with works large and small by contemporary California artists. For lunch, the Sur House at 48123 Highway 1 at Ventana Big Sur Resort. It has an expanded ocean view patio perched above the craggy coastline and a menu drawing from local farms and waters. If you're lingering or letting someone else drive, avail yourself of its 10,000-bottle cellar of small production Central Coast wines to complement house specialties such as the Chipino of clams, mussels, and black cod and crab. Now, saying goodbye to Big Sur is never easy, but the road out keeps the magic going. Even with thousands of residents and tourists, Carmel-by-the-Sea puts the civil in civilization. Strolling for antiques and knickknacks along the charming Ocean Avenue is one of California's ultimate pleasures. For a cozy last bite of Big Sur, La Bicyclette at 29 Dolores Street, a perfect corner bistro serving coastal classics in cast-iron cookware, pizzas and breads fired in wood oven, and strong freshly brewed coffee, all for the journey home. Ooh. Are you ready for the Big Sur? Sure makes it sound like fun, doesn't it? Mm. Well, we also find in our June-July 2018 issue of Virtuoso Traveler, writer David Hockman interviewing Mark and Carla Greenwald for the Why I Travel column. As Hockman notes, the Greenwalds kick-started their travels with an adventure down under, and their vacations haven't been the same since. So let's learn a little bit more about why they travel. It wasn't until he was nearly in his retirement as a critical care physician in 2014 that Mark Greenwald got serious about travel. That's when he reached out to Virtuoso. He explains, I called and said, can you please help a couple of brand new travelers find an expert on Australia and New Zealand? Next thing he knew, the doctor, 72, and his wife, Carla, 71, were planning a four-week Australian adventure from their home in Cape Cod with Kansas-based advisor Michael King. The journeys haven't stopped since. I want to keep learning. That's why I travel, to see beautiful places, new ways of life, different traditions. It changes you. Here we were, people who never really went anywhere. We landed in Australia and New Zealand for a month. What a relief that Michael had everything coordinated. The private guides he arranged were all locals, all friendly, and all knowledgeable about the best restaurants and the best of everything. The highlight was sitting down with an Aboriginal artist and learning to paint in the traditional style. Unforgettable. First step is we talk about where we want to go. In the last few years, Michael has sent us to Africa and on a Mekong River cruise in Cambodia. Both of those trips were with Lindblad Expeditions. In the beginning, we'd lugged two huge checked bags, two of the biggest carry-ons, a camera bag, and anything else we could bring. Now we've got it down. Our two new rigs, our Briggs and Riley carry-ons fit everything we need for a month. Travel gives you instant perspective. You go to Cambodia and meet people in rural areas living on next to nothing, and yet they're still happy, kind, and welcoming. Back home, we get upset if the latest iPhone doesn't do exactly what we ask. Who can pick just one hotel? From an incredible bed and breakfast on the shores of Lake Taupo, New Zealand, to the extraordinary peninsula and Mandarin Oriental hotels in Hong Kong, Michael knows what's great in each destination and gets us fantastic deals. Photography is my hobby, so I still carry a DSLR camera. My Canon EOS 5D Mark IV excels at wildlife photography, but I have the coolest compact camera for Hawaiian-type vacation shots. The Light L16 has 16 lenses that combine more than 10 images into one amazing high-res photograph. On safari 2 years ago in South Africa, we watched a pride of lions take down a Cape buffalo. Nature is awesome. Keys to staying healthy while traveling? Well, watch what you eat. Keep your hands clean. Sleep when the locals sleep to adjust your body's clock. And if you're heading to Cusco in the Andes, you might want to take altitude pills. So, where next for the Greenwalds? Well, in July, we're traveling with Michael and his family. We'll cruise with Lindblad around the glaciers of the Alaska coast with his kids and our kids and probably more than a few whales. And then it's China in 2019. Wow. There's an interesting story about why I travel, huh? Mm. That might be something to think about, right? Why I travel. Lots of good places there. Well, that brings us to an end of today's Journey of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, they may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.